3, Liberation on the Banks of the Sea.
Sister Pollard, as the neighborhood called her, would not get into a car. She chose to walk, one aged leg in front of the other aged leg. She walked against bus segregation for over a year. Through the frigid winter of 1956, she walked. Her legs ached and her body shook, but her eyes were focused, her shoulders upright, confident. Humming hymns and other spirituals, she walked as legal proceedings unfolded in the spring. On she went every day, passing restaurants, city and county buildings, and churches. Every day as she walked past places that denied her rights, that treated her as a second-class citizen. But she kept on through the summer sweltering heat. She didn't have to walk. A woman at her age shouldn't walk alone. It's too risky. Rides were offered to her, but she kept on explaining to those who could catch her, "I'm not walking for myself. I'm walking for my children and my grandchildren." Some asked if she was tired. Her words, like her feet, didn't miss a beat. And she said, "My feet's as tired, but my soul is at rest." Sister Pollard passed away before Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his speech at the Lincoln Memorial, "I Have a Dream." But she did see change come to Montgomery. The buses were integrated. She took a stand and walked with God. I like to think of her now as smiling down on us. And I like to think of her now as if she was here, she'd tell us there's a lot more walking to do. But she's still smiling. She smiles because she sees the unfolding of God's amazing story. What if we thought about the Bible as a script to be lived? What if we thought about ourselves as characters to live out the unfolding drama of the Bible? What if we stopped trying to confirm facts and solve mysteries and entered into this amazing story? Just like Sister Pollard. The script, God's Bible, is the story of God's amazing love. In Act 1, God took a step and created. God fashioned and formed the earth and every one of us. God gifted us with the earth and the beauty around us to be enjoyed. In Act 2, God stepped towards Cain, but Cain stepped away. Cain chose to let the garbage get out of control and killed his brother. Conflict and confrontation and contamination threatened God's story, but God was not finished. God kept reaching out. God keeps inviting every one of us to the adventure of a lifetime. In Act 3, God makes a covenant, a promise with Abraham. God promises that Abraham would be a blessing to all the earth, that his family would bless everyone. So God chooses to use one family to transform the world. Now that's a lot of pressure. And we all know families. And of course, unforeseen conflicts and challenges and circumstances led this family to Egypt for food. But of course, as all great stories have, there's conflict, and the Egyptians eventually enslave the Israelites, Abraham's family. Today's story, Act 3, is the story of how God rescues the Israelites from the Egyptians. The Egyptians had it all, I need to remind you, money, military power, chariots, big hats, and very cool dance moves. Their leader, the Pharaoh, was treated like a god. They built massive pyramids, sculptures, and ornate cities to celebrate their wealth and power. All these spectacles took labor, a whole lot of labor, as you can imagine. So the Egyptians forced a small minority group, the Israelites, to work for them. Now, this is jarring to us because these were the very same people that God blessed and God made the commitment. But now, they're slaves. Slaves in Egypt. And in our hearts, it kind of bursts within is like, how is God going to fix this? What is going to happen in this story? Egyptian taskmasters demanded more and more production. The Israelites worked from sun up to sundown, 16-hour days or longer. Some worked as skilled laborers etching into the beautiful stone. Others made housing districts with mud brick. Methodically, they mixed water, mud, and straw into bricks. Still others tended to the fields, planting, harvesting, watering. Their stomachs shrank and their mouths watered. Their souls ached for more of life than just work, work, work. Whips instilled fear and fortified hate. Then it got worse. The imperial decision was made to kill. And newborn male babies were thrown into the Nile. Cries of pain and sorrow were heard throughout the Israelite campgrounds. Mothers who lost babies and fathers who suffered unbearable pain. The Bible tells us that God heard these groans, these cries, and God moved into action. Moses was an Israelite baby then, and he escaped death miraculously and found a home in the Pharaoh's house. He learned, as the song says, to walk like an Egyptian. He grew, he prospered, he made a name for himself. Then one day, when he saw an Egyptian beating an Israelite, he snapped. He let his anger get the best of him and murdered that Egyptian taskmaster. As the word spread in Egypt, he fled, ashamed, unsure of his future. Well, it's at that point that he changes professions, he falls in love, and he marries. And far away from the land of Egypt and its empire, he learns who God is. He comes to know God. God steps to Moses through a burning bush, as we all remember. God began teaching Moses new ways of walking. He walked back to Egypt, and in a scene we know and words we sing, he declares, "Let my people go." Well, of course, what's a good Pharaoh going to say to this? No way. So this goes back and forth for a long time, of course. Then comes the plagues. Blood in the river, frogs, gnats, flies, dead livestock, boils, hail, locusts, and darkness. Egypt was a mess. Can you imagine the chaos that this empire was going through? But the Bible, God's script, emphasizes that God did these things, that God was delivering God's people to be a blessing to the world, to transform the world. Then the last of the plagues, the death of Pharaoh's firstborn son, finally does it. Pharaoh relents and says, "Go, get out of here." Of course, in the back of his mind, he's thinking, where are they going to go? It's all desert. So God's people, they start walking, putting one foot in front of the other. They didn't know where they were going, but they knew where they had been. And just as they got that glimmer of hope in their eyes, that spirit that says, we are going to make it, they hear the sound of the Egyptian army. Horses, chariots, swords, shields, and armor stopped God's people in their tracks. And then it slipped out. What was Moses thinking? Someone else exclaimed, he's an idiot. And then someone else said, we're going to die. And then, at least a little more thoughtful, said this, is this not the very thing we told you in Egypt? Let us alone and let us serve the Egyptians. For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. And one more time, voicing what everyone else thought, the curmudgeon old man said, Moses is an idiot. So here we are. In front of us, there's a huge sea. Behind us is the Egyptian army, the big imperial army. And all we have is our sandals and a bag and a little bit of matzah. That's it. Our palms are sweaty and our mind races. Fears, real fears grip us. Some of us, instead of that Egyptian army, see unpaid bills. Our economic uncertainties cripple us. Can we pay our mortgage, our credit cards, and our son or daughter's college bill? Can we afford clothes and toys for our kids? And what about that unexpected car bill that we had just last month? Some of us are facing health uncertainties. The aches and the pains and the pending surgeries have taken their toll on our spirits. Our bodies fail and our stress and anxiety rise. We wonder to ourselves, will I live with this pain for the rest of my life? Some of us face that relational uncertainty. Will I be loved by my friends and family? Will I be accepted or will I be rejected? Others of us struggle with ourselves. Do I have what it takes to be successful in this world? Can I really make a difference with the gifts that God has given to me? And echoing within each and every one of our hearts is, can I take another step with God? Can I do it again? So here we are, standing on the bank of the sea. At least we're all in it together. We're all here. But what will we do? Will we surrender to Pharaoh's army or walk with God to the promised land? Do we want the conveniences of empire or the adventure of abundant life? There's a lot of risk involved. It might not be comfortable and convenient all the time. We don't know what's going to happen. We need a deliverer. Moses motions to us to be quiet. He's going to speak. God's appointed leader, Moses, is going to speak to us. And his words are like a lightning bolt to our situation. He says, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm and see the deliverance that the Lord will accomplish for you today." There are three important things to notice about Moses' word to us. First, do not fear. It's a word of comfort, a word of assurance. God is with us. We're not alone. God is bigger than any and all of our fears. And we're going to make it. We're going to make it with God. The second, stand firm is a command. God asks us to plant ourselves. To take a stand. We are not called to walk with the Egyptians, but to take a stand with God's team, with God's story. And third, we are called to see or watch. We are commanded to use our eyes and watch all that God is going to do in our midst, all that God is doing in our lives and in our community and in the world. We're called to marvel. God, the main character, the creator and sustainer of life, is calling to us to take a step. Just one step. We can't stand on that bank forever. The time of decision is here. We struggle with what we're going to do. And God says, go. Put one foot in front of the other and walk across that sea. I'll do the rest. Change is tough. Sometimes we complain, what is this young pastor up to now? Some even say, he's an idiot. But as Sister Pollard shared at the heights of the civil rights movement, I'm not walking for myself. I'm walking for my children and grandchildren. Being a Christian means being a part of a bigger story than just our own. Being a part of a huge global story of God's world-transforming love. We are called to a new place. We are called to go beyond a land of brick and mortar to a land of milk and honey. A land where every family of the earth is blessed. A land where the local church dreams about making a difference in the community and the world. So what will we do? Well, I don't know about you, but what I'm going to do is put one feeble and wobbly leg in front of the other. And I'm going to start walking. And I'm just going to simply watch, give my fears to God, try to stand firm and trust. And you know what? It's so amazing is that there's other God walkers. We're not alone. There's God walkers from every tribe and nation of the world. There's an Argentinian man walking with us. People from South America, people from China and Korea and Russia. We are not alone. We are all learning God's walk in this world. And I hope that you'll walk with me. Amen.